former Black Panther and defendant in the San Francisco 8 case, Lamis Deek of the Muslim Defense Committee, and Andy Stepanian of defendant in the Shaq 7 case.
And that's going to be this Friday at Jetson Memorial, as we have just pointed out. And that's just about all the time that we have for Occupy Wall Street Radio tonight. I want to remind you all once again that on Monday, March 12th at 7 p.m., Professor Michio Kaku, Dr. Michio Kaku, will be speaking on his latest book, Physics of the Future, at the Ethical Culture Society. You can get tickets online by visiting WBAI.org. There will be a meet and greet with Dr. Kaku, and that is for a $99 offering, or you can go to the general admission for a $35 ticket. Visit WBAI.org to get your tickets, and we'll see you there. Thanks for listening to Occupy Wall Street Radio. We want to thank Michael G. Haskins, our engineer, and Reg Johnson, the technical director of Occupy Wall Street Radio.
March 12th, Michio Kaku, the host of Explorations on Saturdays at 2, will be having a fundraising event for WBAI to commemorate the one-year anniversary of the Fukushima disaster and give a lecture on his book, Physics of the Future. There will be a reception facilitated by Robert Knight for 6 to 7, followed by a lecture and a book signing from 7 to 10 p.m. at the New York Society for Ethical Culture, 2 West 64th Street at Central Park West. For information, call 212-209-2800 or link on the WBAI.org webpage.
I told you so, but you did not heed. Did you suppose we were that naive?
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York, where the time is 7:01. Time once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. On Billy Bond for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood.
Good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, post-fundraising. Back to our normal programming, as normal as it can be here on WBAI. And I'm joined tonight by Mike.
Hello.
Dot Rhett.
Hello.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Red Hack.
Hello.
Kyle.
Hi, everybody.
Jim.
Hello.
And Bernie S. down in Philadelphia.
Greetings from Pennsylvania.
Okay, we have a lot of people here tonight. I'm not quite sure why, but more people than we've had in quite a while, which is good, and a lot to talk about. Yes, hackers are in the news again, yet again. Front page of the New York Times, front page of everything, and yes, we're going to be talking about that, the latest developments in an ongoing saga that never seems to end. But before we dive into that, I'd like to focus on a couple of other things that might not be quite as momentous, but certainly... thank you, Jim. Yeah, he's holding up a headline, front page. Is that what paper is that? AM New Yorker.
Yeah.
All right. Wow, front page. What's the hackers cracked? That's the headline there. Hackers have been cracked. How about that?
Wow. We should have a competition for our listeners. What's the worst headline in the country on this one story?
Yeah, that wouldn't be too hard to. Something. I'm sure there are a lot of competitors for that.
OTH@2600.com if you have an entry.
Please. And send us a picture, too. And don't make your own newspaper just to make the headline. We've fallen for that before, and it's not going to happen again. It's got to be a real paper that we can verify.
Well, start your own newspaper to be the media.
If you start your own newspaper, you're going to have to continue
yeah.
day after day, and we're going to check up on you.
Yeah.
All right.
I encourage our listeners to do that as well, but it's a lot more investment than just sending us a link to an existing newspaper.
All right. So before we get into that, and of course we'll be taking listener phone calls too, with a special caveat, which we'll get into later, but we will take listener phone calls. It's just going to be a bit of a challenge. The fun we have here. This is a story that, actually, Kyle, you found this, and
yeah.
I've been simply fascinated by it. A bunch of hackers all over the planet have been looking into this. The headline basically... is amateur astronomers flash the space station. Now, you know, you might interpret that in all sorts of weird ways, but the only way to really interpret it is that a bunch of hackers on the ground, and I say hackers, they're amateur astronomers, same thing, okay? It really is the same thing. If you ever hung out with amateur astronomers, you can't be with a more hackerish group of people as far as I'm concerned. And basically, well, Kyle, you seem to know this better than me as far as what they actually did down there in Texas. You want to explain it first?
Yeah, there was a discussion going on a list that I participate in in Seattle. And basically, people were talking a lot about this having been done. And the impetus of it was a blog post by somebody on the space station. I think Petty. What's the astronaut's name?
You put me on the spot here, but
sorry about that.
Don Petit.
Yes. I'm sorry. And so he did a blog post about flashing ISS. And when you say flashing ISS, what it really means is people attempting to use light to flash the space station such that the space station sees it. And it sounds kind of easy to do. And we've heard stuff like this before about like people using lasers and like pointing them at airplanes, doing stupid things like that.
Right.
This is a little different, but pretty much the same thing.
So there's a video online where you can just see everybody sort of hanging out in a field by an observatory, pointing this laser up and basically flashing it, turning it off, turning it on, or putting something in front of it. And literally pointing it directly at the space station, which you can see up in the sky.
Yes.
By the way, I just want to ask in the room, how many of you have ever seen the space station up in the sky? Dot Red, you're raising your hand. I'm sure the listeners can appreciate that. That Bernie has. Mike, no?
I think I have, yeah.
Yeah? Rob T. Firefly, no? Red Hack, no? Jim? Yeah? You saw it? Okay, great. So, of course, Kyle, you have and I have. It's an amazing thing. Bernie, you want to share what it's like?
It's very easy. It looks like a bright star that's moving across the sky. It's in a low Earth orbit, so it's not in a fixed position.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a few minutes, it'll be out of sight after it crosses the sky. And you can look it up. There's various websites online. You can find what its path is, and it's quite amazing. Some people with telescopes have seen it. You can actually pick out. People have been used telescopes, like amateur astronomers, like you're just talking about, are great hackers. Some of them have actually used charge couple devices, like detectors, solid state detectors, like from a camera, to get pretty well defined images of the space shuttle from the ground. You know, you can see the solar panels and everything. That is amazing.
So, based on this post the astronaut had posted, it basically was people started talking about it because he was remarking that it's been attempted, but nobody's ever done it ever, and so that it had only been talked about for a couple weeks since he posted his blog post. And I guess as a response to the original post, a couple weeks later, it happened. And in fact, it happened over the weekend on Saturday. And he posted a follow-up or like an update, and it actually was successfully done by this group in Texas.
So you've mentioned the people that point lasers up into the sky and cause pilots to get angry and things like that.
Right.
Now is there like a risk that they could inadvertently do this by pointing a laser up into the sky and anger some airplane pilots the same, or be seen as evil people by the powers that be?
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, in the video and some of the planning, you could tell that they had people looking out for planes and stuff like that. So it obviously, I think it was a concern, definitely. Uh-huh. So,
and Don Petit, the astronaut on board, sent an email the next day, according to one of the observers on the ground. He told us how bright it was, how he could see the lights even before we started the flash system. He saw it from 10 degrees above, from the west to 10 degrees from the northeast. And to everyone's surprise, he could also see the blue laser. When the spotlights were off, he said he could still see the blue laser, which was shown steadily. I was pretty surprised that the laser light was that visible from space. And according to one of the people organizing all of this, of the 65 amateur astronomers who were there, we had two people manually aiming the lights, two people holding plywood up over the lights, and they were manually tracking the space station. It doesn't get any better than that. And this also is something that people, if you're trying to flash the space station, something to keep in mind. This comes from one of the astronauts there. Ironically, when Earthlings can see us, we cannot see them. The glare from the full sun effectively turns our windows into mirrors that return our own ghostly reflection. This often plays out when friends want to flash space station from the ground as it travels overhead. They shine green lasers, xenon strobes, and halogen spotlights at us as we sprint across the sky. These well-wishers don't know that we cannot see a thing during this time. The best time to try this is during a dark pass when orbital calculations show that we are passing overhead. This becomes complicated when highly... a word I've never said before, collimated light from lasers are used.
It means a light that's all going in one direction. So if you have a light bulb, the light comes out in every which way. But if you have a laser, it's a very narrow fixed beam that's called collimated light.
Amazing things you can learn just by listening to the radio. Anyway, since the beam diameter at our orbital distance is about 1 kilometer, and this spot has to be tracking us while in the dark. And of course, we have to be looking. As often happens, technical details complicate what seems like a simple observation. So far, all attempts at flashing the space station have failed. Until now. Dot Red.
As you kind of touched on the whole issue of the collimated light, for people who are wondering just how newsworthy of a story this is, realize it's like throwing a dart over 90 miles and hitting a bullseye. And you have atmospheric distortion on top of that.
And as an added bonus, all our astronauts are now blinded. I hope you're all very happy.
Bernie, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, it may not be quite as challenging as was just described. All lasers are not perfectly collimated, and the beam does expand as the distance increases. So the distance to the space shuttle means that the width of the laser beam is probably hundreds, if not thousands, of feet across at that point. It's still a hard target, but it's not like you're a pencil-thin beam you're trying to hit the spatial width.
Bernie, actually, in the original discussion, people were remarking that by the time the beam gets there, the diameter of it is about a kilometer.
Yeah.
So they had to compensate, and I don't know exactly what they did technically to change the properties of the beam, but it was all sort of like, you know, their homebrew gear, and it's really remarkable if you can catch the video. And the thing is,
when you describe this to people, they say, really, you're this emotional about flashing a light from the Earth and spending all this time to get somebody in space to see it, and that makes you happy. And when people say that, implying that it's a tremendous waste of time, that, my friends, is the definition of hacking. That's when people just don't get it and they don't understand the passion, but you want to spend as much time as possible doing it. That's what it's all about.
Well, there are uses for these sorts of things. They always start out as very strange things that few mm-hmm. people can see an application minded. For instance, when radio waves were first discovered, what'd they say about radio waves? Oh, this is useless. It's just some thing that's just there in the background. There's always uses for these things, no matter how strange it might seem. And
there were still people who say that radio waves are useless, but
I'll say that for anyone who uses cell phones. And
we'll give
so
out
on.
The number for you folks to call in just a little while. Okay.
Kyle?
Yes, go ahead. Bernie.
Go ahead.
Has anyone experimented yet, or have they put equipment on the space station yet for modulating any of these light sources?
Right. So you could develop a Ronja system where you get optical data transmission or something?
Well, no. More like Alexander Graham Bell's photophone, which he considered a more
sure.
important invention than the telephone, which
right.
modulated a beam of sunlight, but we could do that with lasers and other sources of light. And then you demodulate it into sound at the other end. I think that would be really cool, but you'd have to keep the beam tracked perfectly and everything.
Yeah, it would be really interesting. I'm sure. I mean, there's definitely technology to set up a galvo such that you could track something like that. Or even if it was higher up. I mean, if it was a satellite that stays in a fixed position and tracks Earth, that would be like even more practical because then you're not dealing with having to follow it. It's just a straight beam. But it's definitely possible. It's really interesting, and it's really cool to see people on the ground and, you know, people that aren't, you know, professionals or like part of some agency, like getting involved and just trying different cool things to reach a milestone like this, you know, because now it's been done.
It's probably also worth noting that this is a far easier task than what has been done for decades, which is hitting a retroreflector on the lunar surface. There's retroreflectors on the moon that scientists have hit with a laser mm-hmm. to very precisely measure the Earth-Moon distance. That, my friends, is a tough target.
Interesting. Now, what are these things on the moon?
They're called retroreflectors.
And you know, does anybody know who put them there?
Yeah, the aliens did, of course.
Oh, okay. Wow. Again, I'm just learning so much.
You know, the U.S. has put them up there, the various Apollo missions. Uh-huh. There's retroreflectors are more commonly seen on the tops of sailboats. It's basically, those are like radar retroreflectors. It kind of looks like basically means when a signal hits it, a wavefront hits it, whether it's a beam of light or a radio signal, it bounces back in the same direction that it was hit from. So if you shoot a laser at a retroreflector, you get a laser beam pointed right back at you at the same direction.
But Bernie, it's more or less a mirror, yeah?
Yeah, but it's a mirror that no matter from what direction you hit it, it will bounce your beam of light back in the same direction you hit it from, unlike a flat mirror, which will bounce it off at some angle if it's not perfectly flat against you.
So it's a disco ball.
Well, no, it's a retroreflector. It's different. A disco ball will shoot it off in different directions.
All right, let's stop trying to poke holes in Bernie's mirror here or whatever it is. But that's cool. A lot of cool things out there, a lot of cool things in space, and keep reaching for the skies and all that kind of thing. But we must move on. We have other things to discuss. Now, this is a story, actually, that we knew about for a couple of weeks, and it kind of involves us in a weird way. Apparently, the government is going around monitoring social media sites, and according to them, they have a current list of terms that they use to provide situational awareness and establish a common operating picture. As natural or man-made disasters occur, new search terms may be added. But we're already in there. We're already in there for some kind of a disaster. They basically divide these up into different categories. For instance, under DHS and other agencies, they basically list the agencies: Coast Guard, Central Intelligence Agency, Border Patrol, Secure Border Initiative, that kind of thing. Domestic security, a lot of interesting words in there: assassination, attack, domestic security, cops, shots fired, militia, lockdown, crash, looting, pipe bomb, things like that. Then you got hazmat and nuclear, where you have fun words like cloud, plume, leak, chemical, burn, nerve agent, anthrax, blister agent, spillover, and North Korea. And then health concern, H1N1, salmonella, smallpox, listeria, agriculture, influenza, bacteria, avian, agro-terror, and swine, among all sorts of other things. It's really incredible what we have here. Infrastructure security, basically have the list of all kinds of agencies, such as Port Authority and BART and MORTA, Metro, Collapse, bridge, cancel, delays. I can't believe delays is a word that they would be looking for.
So, Emmanuel, if I were in San Francisco and I said, gee, it's cloudy today, I think I'll take the BART instead of biking, like, that could get on this list?
It could get on this list. I don't exactly know how it works. We're going to get into it in just a moment. Also, Southwest border violence. This is a good one. Gang, violence, drug, narcotics, Yuma, Nueva León, Guzman, all kinds of names of people. Bust is one of them. And then, of course, you have terrorism, and you have this is basically a who's who of terrorism. You've got IRA, you've got ETA, you've got PLF, you've got PLO, you got Karabam, Jihad, Al-Shabaab, Somalia, Nigeria, radicals, Islamist, nuclear, agro, Pakistan, suspicious substance, etc.
How many words?
You know, I didn't count them, but it's quite a few, quite a few. It's just about 4 pages long. Weather disaster emergency, you also have tremor, flood, storm, crest, temblor, all kinds of things like that. Now, when you get to cybersecurity, you get words like hacker, freaking, worm, China, malware, and 2600.
Really?
Yes, folks. We are in there. We made the list. So whenever you say 2600 in a social media setting, someone somewhere in the government might be monitoring that and taking an interest.
I guess that means that people shouldn't reply to the account on Twitter.
I don't know. Yeah, we do have our 2600 Twitter account, so maybe if you say something, you might get logged somewhere.
But this seems like a really broad net. I mean, it depends. How are they filtering this? If they're just looking for some of these words, I mean, you know, you could be talking about cloud computing, and suddenly, you know, that means you're talking about, you know, nuclear disasters.
They'll look at you until they realize that you are, in fact, innocent, talking about cloud computing, then they'll move on to the next
person. But that's the thing. You know, there's so many updates and so many various things out there that could match, that I can just think of off the top of my head, that could match a number of these words that, you know, are they looking at every single one, or do they have some algorithm to parse it out? Because if you have so much data coming by you, it kind of turns into like the London security cameras, where there's just so much that you can't process it all. So I wonder how smart they are about it. I don't think it's necessary, but, you know, it's not my call.
I counted them.
You did count them. Okay, how many are there?
A rudimentary count using a word processor comes up with 1,050 words.
And whatever you do, do not review the next action film you see on the internet, because...
Well, I think obviously the amount of terms that are being used here, this is definitely has to be running through computers, and that kind of really draws on the point of with any action you take online and posts you make on various social media, you're going to be getting logged onto several different lists of interest, and there's no way you can avoid using all these terms. So saying 2600 seriously, you're going to be put in for saying cloud? Everyone's going to be in because of that.
Well, maybe if you say both.
Maybe if you say both. And that's another thing to make, is that the more terms you use, the more often you use, that might increase your noteworthiness.
My another one of my favorites on this list is under cybersecurity. One of the terms they look for on social media is social media.
Yes. Well, it's kind of predictable.
So what's interesting, so this is pretty stupid, right? But what's scary is that their algorithms are only going to get better. And so maybe they don't do anything now, but they're going to be able to detect at some point in the future the difference between me saying it's cloudy today, I think I'll take the BART, and on a cloudy day, we will release a cloud of sarin gas on the BART. They're going to be able to detect the difference and come after me. And that is the frightening part.
Just like
Google. I mean, you can apply natural language processing and kind of try to infer meaning a little bit more. Obviously, there are kind of rankings that you could do where, okay, if somebody's mentioning these words in conjunction, or you know, has been talking about this kind of subject a lot, maybe there's something we should look at manually. So there are ways, obviously, to refine it. It may seem silly for us that these words are, you know, seem so broad, but again, you know, they just could be used in some kind of system, right? It doesn't necessarily mean they're just looking at every use of them.
Right, and they would probably also rank it such that if you posted the whole list, they'd throw it out because obviously they're trying to mess with you or something.
Yeah, so if you're going to do that and add words to your email so that you do get flagged, don't add all the words or they'll just ignore you.
Of course, we could be giving them more credit than they deserve. I mean, you don't know.
Well, I would have to agree with Mike that the longer this goes on, the better these algorithms are going to work. And the thing is, we're seeing the words, we're not seeing the algorithm behind it. So there's no telling exactly how much importance might be drawn to a single word or what collection of words and what sort of order or how frequently you actually get flagged or how often someone gets flagged. Chances are everyone gets flagged to some degree, though.
The other thing I would caution is that it is not reasonable to assume that this tool will be used wisely. If you remember the case we discussed not that long ago about the kids from, where were they, England, who were flying to the U.S. and they were saying, we're going to dig up Marilyn Monroe's grave, whatever they were saying, and they weren't let in the country because even with human review, the U.S. government was not able to determine that these were harmless kids. This tool is going to be used to restrict people's civil liberties, whether they're guilty of anything or not. And as the algorithms get better and better, they're only going to be used to repress more and more people, and it's beginning.
But you know what word is not on there? The word hope. The word hope is not on that list. So you can say on social media that, yes, I will be attending the Hope Conference this summer in New York City, and you will not be flagged anywhere. However, do not say that you will be visiting the Hope Conference sponsored by 2600 or anything like that, hackers or cyber terror or North Korea. Or don't use those words. And everything should be okay.
I mean, I think people should say whatever they want, but just be aware that just be aware that whatever you say publicly and whatever you say on the internet can be used against you, and as we're seeing more and more, will be used against you. So just be aware when you're posting things publicly or even not publicly. Who knows, right? I mean, who knows who's working closely with the government? These things can come back to bite you.
Honestly, just remember one thing. The internet is not really private. If you're going to say anything at all on the internet, whether you think it's public or private, imagine that many, many, many people are reading. Imagine that it's public. And you're not going to go very far.
As we've seen in the past, the government will make demands of various companies. Twitter happened to, make public that they were that the private tweets of certain individuals associated with WikiLeaks were requested by the government. But that's not necessarily true all the time. So, like Eli said, it's not necessarily what you think is private or public. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's certainly. You know, one thing that gets me though, you notice that every time somebody is accused of plotting some kind of terrorist act, not something that's wars necessarily, but some kind of action, they always somehow go through the FBI first. They always somehow are transferred over to their bomb making people that supply them with what they think are real bombs or plans for that. And it just makes me wonder, where are the actual terrorists? Because every time you express an interest, whether it be online or in person, to blow something up, you wind up talking to the FBI. It's just amazing how that happens, isn't it?
Well, it's fortunate that relatively few people actually do care to bomb things, and most of them work for the U.S. government.
It seems that way. It really does. And I just wonder if you go out there on the internet and you express that kind of a desire. Who's to say you're not just trying to meet some federal agents? Because that's invariably what you're going to wind up doing. And it could be just some kind of, you know, weird game that you like to play.
I mean, no one wants to meet federal agents.
Well, some people, well, yeah, we won't go into that.
I think what we're fortunate in is the fact that most wannabe terrorists aren't very competent and don't really have the connections. And so when they go out seeking the kinds of connections they would need to do anything, they end up, you know, coming across law enforcement before.
You'd think by now they'd have the connections, though, you know? Worldwide, through the internet, all that kind of thing. It just it amazes me sometimes like you say, they're inept. They can't seem to put it together.
But I mean, think about, you know, for example, you know, last week we had the Yes Men on, and they're able to fool conferences and large companies into thinking that they're very public entities. And so, you know, how difficult must it be for someone to try to find a group that's trying to remain clandestine, right? I don't know. I mean, and obviously, if you're law enforcement, you want to be, you know, found, right? If by these wannabe terrorists, so it's kind of.
Did you see the Yes Men's new thing?
I saw something yesterday, which I knew was the Yes Men before it got identified as the Yes Men. This is the Happy Meal thing, right?
Yeah.
Tell us about this.
Apparently, so people may not know if they're not from New York. The New York Police Department has this thing called Stop and Frisk, where if they think you might be up to something, they'll stop you and frisk you, and then you probably aren't up to anything, so they'll let you go. And surprise, surprise, most of the people they do this to are young men of color.
Is this the subway thing, or is this something else?
This is not the thing in the subway. This is just people hanging out on the street. They do it in the subway, too, but that's a separate program. Anyway, so what the Yes Men did was they sent out a press release from the New York Police Department and McDonald's saying that if you get stopped and frisked 3 times, you can get a free Happy Meal for it.
Which, to me, just adds insult to injury, but apparently enough people thought that was a good thing where they actually expressed happiness about this. And
What exactly is the point of the frisking? To find what? Weapons, drugs, all of the above?
Well, you're missing the point. It's about the Happy Meal. That's what we're talking about.
There isn't one, right, as far as I can detect.
Fishing.
Fishing, you say, Barney?
It's their, you know... You know, when they're on duty, they really can't go out in the river and lakes and ocean and go fishing. So they go fishing amongst the populace.
Mm-hmm.
Just go on fishing expeditions and see what they can stick their hands into.
But we should point out that when you're in the subway and you get approached by one of those nice cops behind a big table that want you to hand over your bag so they can rummage through it, you have the right to walk away from that. Of course, you can't get into the subway system. They'll block you from that. Of course, you can't go across the street or to the next subway and get in there, or just go to a bus instead. But hopefully you're not about to blow something up. I don't know about on the street, though. Can you just walk away from that?
I think you can say no, yeah. But it's intimidating when a group of police officers come and say, hey, we're going to frisk you now.
Right, right.
Most people will comply.
I mean, and you know, I don't think we should be judging and saying that that's wrong what they do, the people that is, because until you're in that situation, you don't know how you're going to react. The same thing happened to me, and this was documented years ago on this radio show in North Carolina, where I consented to having my rental car searched because basically I was asked with one cop behind me in a car and another cop sitting next to me, and obviously I was in the middle of North Carolina, so yeah, I consented and I wasn't happy about it, but you know, sometimes you have to do things that you're not happy with.
Just remember, in most cases, you're not under any obligation to comply with a search.
Mm-hmm.
The only way that a police officer can search your person or your vehicle or anything like that is if A, they have a warrant, or B, they have a reasonable suspicion, which, I mean, really has to be they have to see something, right? Like, if you're smoking, something
they don't have to see something. They have to say they see something. Big difference.
Uh-huh.
Well, know? Sure.
And
but I mean, the point is that you are protected and you don't have to comply with illegal searches, well, even if they tell you that they have every right to search your car. They can lie.
Of course.
In that track, there is also not trying to be arrogant about that right which you're supposed to have and not using what could be interpreted as a condescending tone, because then if the cop gets annoyed, they can start saying they saw something. You want to make sure that you're not getting on someone's bad side, because then it goes from saying I'm exercising my rights to you're not cooperating with an officer.
So that's true what you said, Red Hacked. You don't have to comply, but this does not absolve the police of the evil they're doing, where they're going around asking people if they can search them.
Right.
And, I mean, that's the problem.
So obviously the police are doing something that they shouldn't be doing, but I think it also helps just for people to know that they're not allowed to do that. And so, you know, generally the best thing to do is just say, am I free to go? or just say no. Don't get into an argument. Just say no. I mean, if they have no reason, then they can't really do anything. They can't arrest you for refusing to be searched.
Yeah, and this is something I've gotten familiar with crossing over into borders. I basically just say as little as possible and just let them do their thing and try not to have my rights violated too much. And just you gotta be patient.
And they're doing a job too, so that's more work for them if they're really trying to make something up. And they know it's not going to stick. I mean, yeah. they really have to want to go out on a limb with some big fabrication. So I mean, if you just kind of stick to your guns yeah. and stay calm, right?
I think with police officers generally, they you know use the people's ignorance that they don't realize that they can refuse. And so you know, the moment that you consent, then you know they can search you. But
right.
but as long as you know that you don't have that you have to actively consent, then you know that's as long as you stick to that, then you know you're all good.
Okay, now moving on to our feature presentation of the night. This is the story you've probably heard all about, and that is should I read one of the headlines here? I guess we can read this from the Huffington Post. Hackers reeling after FBI takedown led by Mole, who was one of the alleged leaders of the anonymous collective known as Sabu. Yeah, well, it's very interesting because I think some of us have actually talked to him as well in one form or another. He's somebody that was very, very you didn't see his face. You didn't know who he was, but he was a name associated with the Anonymous Collective and with LulzSec last year. And to find out that in actuality, this guy was talking to the feds for at least the last 9 months or so. And helping them to find various people responsible for various hacker activities, I suppose, ranging from Arab Spring activities to hacking Nintendo's and Nintendo's website or the Fox News Network, New York Times, all kinds of things. It's kind of unsettling. But you know, it's not a surprise. I don't know if anybody is really surprised by this. If you are. Look at our talk from the Next Hope, where you know what did we say, Bernie? It was 1 in 4 hackers, 1 in 5 is an informant.
Well, I mean, I think that number was just sort of pulled out of the sky, but it's it would not be surprising if one. It varies. It's a fungible number. It could be every other hacker. It could be 1 in 5, 1 in 4. It really depends on the circumstances and how much pressure is applied to the person who the feds want to be an informant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in this case, the FBI reportedly told Sabu, I don't have his real name here in front of me, but that they would not be able to see his two young children for a long time.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I'm looking at the Fox story. Fox actually broke this. I guess they were very happy to break the story since Anonymous hacked their website. But that was one of the things. Apparently, they did this whole good cop, bad cop thing. Here's how they describe it. The agents worked their prey using the time-honored good cop, bad cop routine. Bad cop stormed out of the apartment yelling, "That's it, no deal, it's over, we're locking you up." The computer genius, as they describe him, finally gave in, surrendering to the most cliched tool in the law enforcement arsenal. But the agents had more than just skills. They had leverage. One of the two agents recalled it was because of his kids. He'd do anything for his kids. He didn't want to go away to prison and leave them. That's how we got him. Now, with that in mind, how do we blame somebody for acting like this? How do we blame somebody for turning in his compatriots or working with them to save his family?
I don't understand. This happened in his apartment. This yeah. didn't happen in an interrogation room. Or
no, they burst in
with a lawyer
right
present
here, right
or
here in New
like
York
that.
City. No, this happened in New York City. These were agents that knocked on his door. Right by the FDR Drive, and basically intimidated him, and yeah, that's what happens. It happens all the time. We see it constantly. Bernie, you saw this, right?
Sure. I mean, they tried to intimidate me for Secret Service a decade and a half ago. I was not in. In all fairness, I can't claim that I'm more resilient than Sabu was because I didn't have any kids. I wasn't in a romantic relationship at the time. I had no real family members that were connected to me closely at that moment. Mm-hmm. It's just the bottom line is I was sort of a lone person, and it didn't matter to me how this would affect people around me. So in his case, he had way more to lose.
Right. And these are the authorities. They're good at it. Read 1984. They know how to make people betray each other. That is what they do, which is why you never want to put yourself in a position where you can do that or where you're the target. And that was the mistake they made.
But what I don't understand is it sounds like from the story that he didn't even have a lawyer or anything to...
No, of course not.
Right. So that brings another point up. Never talk to the authorities without a lawyer, because it will never, ever, ever work in your favor.
But of course, this was a guy who was unemployed, was on welfare, was supporting, I think, what, five brothers and two kids and all kinds of things like that. So calling the lawyer probably wouldn't be as easy.
Yeah, but you can still get a public defender. You're under no obligation to talk to the authorities either.
Right.
I mean, if they're going to arrest you, they're going to arrest you whether or not you talk to them.
Right. These are easy things to say.
No, I know they're
easy. It's actually happening in your own house.
I understand
that. And don't get me wrong, you know, I'm not an apologist for any of this stuff. I'm just saying that this happens over and over again, and we need to learn from it. We need to move on. We need to expect this to happen. I'm amazed how many people are surprised.
But what I'm saying is that right now we have a platform with the radio to tell people that this is, I mean, that kind of thing is unacceptable. If you ever find yourself under arrest, don't talk to the police.
Right.
Unless you have a lawyer present, because A, the lawyer will know the law much better than you do, will know what the police are trying to do. There's a great talk online. I don't remember off the top of my head. It's a professor talking about why you should never talk to law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a counter argument given by a police officer who opened with everything that guy just said is right.
Right.
So
right. They will take you away, though, and that's something to keep in mind. They will take you, they will arrest you, take you out of your home before you have the ability to make that phone call. And that's something.
But it's a right that you have. You
it's
have
a right you
to,
have,
to,
but a lot of people won't want that to happen, and that's why they crack at that point.
I just wanted to add to what Red Hack said that, you know, a lawyer is also going to be much less emotionally attached. They're not, you know, personally threatened. It's not their family necessarily. So they're going to keep sort of a cool head. Whereas you might be, you know, your heart might be racing. You might not know exactly what to say. Or you might misspeak or something.
And they know how to get you.
I know.
How to get your emotions up.
Fear is a really strong tool that the police use. But the fact of the matter is that these kinds of things aren't going to be decided based on what you do in those first 5 minutes. They're going to be decided much later by the courts.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, you're at a disadvantage if you act rashly, which is what it sounds like he did.
Mm-hmm.
So just if, I mean, hopefully none of our listeners ever find ourselves in a similar predicament. But if you do realize that what happens in that instant is not going to affect you in the long term, and you're better off just kind of, you know, keeping quiet and sorting everything out and dealing with it as it comes.
But the thing to remember is that you will have armed men in your home telling you otherwise. And we can say now that, yeah, don't believe them and listen to what we're saying on the radio tonight. It's going to be very different when that happens. You're going to be intimidated. You're going to want to be their friend. You're going to want to just not have this continue any further. And they will tell you, yeah, you can go get a lawyer. You can go that route, but it's going to be much more unpleasant, just like they do on TV. I'm just saying don't expect it to be easy when that happens,
it
because
won't be
it's very
easy,
difficult.
But realize, you know, what your rights are and that keeping a cool head. Look, you've gotten caught, right? You're in trouble already. Mm-hmm. You're going to be arrested. You know, there's no way out of that. And so at that moment, you know, if you can, you know, try to keep a cool head, then, and you know, try to get a lawyer and all of that, because, you know, just talking yourself is just going to talk you into a corner. And, mm-hmm. and nothing that the police officers promise necessarily, you know, is going to be true, right? They can say whatever they want. The police, the authorities are entitled to lie as much as they want. And so, you know, just hopefully, again, none of our listeners ever find ourselves in that situation, but realize and look up that talk if you can. I can't remember what it's called, but just, you know, look for never talk to the police.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, you say, yeah, you've been caught. It's all over. But many times when they knock on the door, that's the first moment you ever even suspect you've been caught. And in this particular case, you know, someone with anonymous, you know, it was kind of surprising. And apparently the way he got caught was just once, not shielding his IP. And it showed up, I think, in an IRC chat room. And from that, they were able to figure out where he was, who he was. And they went to his door. And here's the thing. He said, when they knocked on the door, it's not me. You got the wrong guy. I don't have a computer. And of course, right behind them, the Ethernet cable and the DSL modem had the lights were flashing on and off. So it wasn't a very good ruse there.
I mean, I don't want to be misinterpreted here. You know, he's alleged to commit crimes, and you know, those are crimes that if you know he's found guilty of, he'll have to be held accountable for. But you know, sometimes that's not the case. And so I just, you know, I think it's important that people realize that there's a right way to handle things and a wrong way to handle things.
The issue,
and then let the courts decide it.
Well, the issue here, like, if you really think about what we've been saying is, all right, you know, these guys bust in the door and you're scared. You want to get out of, you know, being in trouble. And they're telling you, well, you're going to be in trouble unless you do this. Mm-hmm. You're talking about people being uninformed. And if you're going to be in this sort of issue, I think... Again, I want to reiterate, hopefully none of our listeners ever find themselves in such of a situation, but...
It does tend to happen.
It does happen on occasion. honestly, people, hackers, should be thinking about it like hackers. They should learn about the system before they ever encounter it. You know, if you know what to expect, if you have a basic understanding of how these things work, if something like that ever happens, whether you're wrongfully or rightly accused, you'll have an idea of what exactly you're treading into. You know, it's RTFM. You shouldn't just jump into something without any idea of what's going on, because then you're going to be blindsided.
Red Hack, then Bernie.
Even if you plan never do anything illegal, you should still be aware of this, because you never know what'll happen. You never know what can come. Someone can use your wireless network, and then suddenly you've got the police at your door, and you say the wrong thing, and you end up convicted even though you've never done anything wrong. So I think that these kinds of rules and things are good to know.
Go ahead, Bernie.
I just want to follow up on what Red Hack said. Not only are federal law enforcement officers and run-of-the-mill police, state and local police, encouraged to lie to suspects in order to get them to confess or give up information. So you can expect them to lie to you, but it doesn't work both ways. If you lie to a federal law enforcement officer, you have committed a felony. It's a felony to lie to a federal law enforcement officer. If you just say, I don't know what you're talking about, or I didn't do that, or I wasn't there, and they can convince a jury otherwise, you'll be convicted of a felony. Remember, Martha Stewart, no hacker, she went to federal prison for lying to the FBI, not for insider trading, which she was probably guilty of. But the bottom line is, that's why you really need to keep your mouth shut. You might even be quoted out of context and said and accused of lying when you didn't. So the best thing is, don't say anything.
Exactly.
You might not even intentionally lie. And just, like we said before, you're scared, spur of the moment, and it might just come out, or you may speak something, a half-truth, and then you get convicted on that, as opposed to, what the original thing was. So just, keep a cool head and don't say anything.
It's too bad we couldn't have this broadcast a week ago. Yeah. That would have happened. Actually, this is not the case.
August.
Yeah, this happened, I think it was last, was it June? When did it actually happen?
Oh, there.
I didn't really have time to go over the entire thing, but
it's quite long and dense.
It is long and dense, much like the authorities. I'm sorry. But the
authorities aren't long.
Yeah, okay, I guess not. I have to figure out how to apply that word. But summer. But what they have here in this document, this indictment, I guess, which was released yesterday, released on Tuesday. Well, first of all, how did it become clear that Sabu was cooperating? Because none of these documents say it clearly that he was the one. They identify a witness through some kind of code. And I guess maybe if you look at IRC chat logs, you figure out who's actually the one talking.
I think also we've talked about this before, and that it tends to be, oh well, this person was convicted or was in court at this date, and then suddenly there was an informant, right? And you can kind of put two and two together without doing much.
Okay. Yeah, I just wasn't exactly sure how they. I mean, it's obvious, but I just was trying.
Yeah,
to
even
out.
If the even if the witness isn't named, but mm-hmm. if somebody who is related to that group was suddenly in trouble shortly before there was an informant, then that's mm-hmm. a pretty good chance that person's the informant.
Well, now in this document, though, in this indictment, there's it really reads like a resume. It's at some places, on or about January 2011. The defendant participated in Operation Tunisia, in which members of Anonymous launched cyber attacks against computer systems used by the government of Tunisia. Operation Algeria, same thing. Operation Yemen, Operation Zimbabwe. All of these totalitarian countries being attacked by a bunch of freedom-loving hackers. But then, of course, and you wonder, are they actually going to get charged with that? Are the United States authorities really going to stand up for repressive regimes and charge these hackers?
They do that all the time.
Well, of course. But then you get the more obvious ones and the reasons why this is actually happening. And that's, the defendant participated in a cyber attack on computer systems used by HP Gary. a cyber attack on computer systems used by Fox, and all these American corporations that that were, I guess, victims. Sony Pictures, Sony Music, the U.S. Senate, InfraGuard Atlanta, Bethesda Software, just goes on and on and on. And, you know, I look at all this and I say to myself, so what? It's, you know, these people needed a wake-up call. And in cases where the Arizona Police Department is using racial profiling, I think it's great to release the names of all the cops in Arizona, whatever it is that was done in that particular case. But of course, then you move on a little further and you see that there was credit card fraud, credit cards allegedly being sold and things like that. And that's what I have problems with. Those are real crimes when people are stealing money or charging things to themselves and making other people pay for that. And if that is alleged to be true, that's really what I consider to be serious. But all this other stuff, it's just it's growing pains of the net, and it's people learning things that I think they have a right to know.
Unfortunately, though, your opinion on what should and should not be illegal doesn't change what is and is not illegal, right?
That's
breaking into the computer systems in the first place, no matter what the intent or no matter what the you know, whether it's a good cause or a bad cause, doesn't change the fact that that is a crime under, you know, under the law.
Well, laws are formed first through opinions, and hopefully opinions will change.
I would like to talk for a moment about the Anonymous connection to this, because this guy is being paraded around in the news as a high-ranking member of the group Anonymous and a big name in Anonymous and this and that. But of course, they all get it wrong, as most of these stories do, because Anonymous is, of course, not a group and there are no leaders. It routes around damage, including missing Sabus. So, of course, this is not going to affect Anonymous one bit, I don't think. But
no, for every head that gets chopped off, we sprout two.
Yeah.
And we've said things like that, you know, here, every time they attack us, we just get stronger. It's true. When you have massive groups like this, the thing I'm concerned about is that it will result in all kinds of retaliation and wars and things like that, everything the media is predicting. And I just think that that people are bigger than that they'll realize some of the things we're saying here, that situations happen sometimes where it's just you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, and you know, you got to move on and continue with what you believe in.
And there's a very good article in the winter edition of 2600 by our friend Aesthetics, which very well explains what Anonymous is and isn't. And if you've got a hold of that, you should take a look.
All right. Now, we'd like to open this up to phone calls. Our phone number is 212-209-2900. Now, I mentioned there was a big caveat to that. The caveat is that for some reason that I cannot fathom, we have lost our hunt sequence. And what that means is that when you call a particular line and it's busy, it's supposed to jump over to the next line. Well, that's not going to happen tonight. Tonight, only one person is going to be able to get through at a time before someone else gets a busy signal. So what we're going to do is pick up the line, and hopefully somebody will be there, and then we're going to hang it up, and the phone should ring immediately again. And we'll just have to keep doing it like that.
It's like one of those radio call-in contests.
Well, from the 1950s, yeah. But you see, it looks like we only have one call, but we probably have a whole lot of busy signals in there, which we can't see. So undoubtedly, this will be Rebel, so let's get it over with. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up, please.
Hello. Hey, how you doing?
How you doing? What's up?
Listen, I wanted to talk to the guys on...
You're talking to them. Make it quick.
Hello.
I'm sorry, yeah. When we grew up in school, there was always a bad guy or a bad girl. And when we go on in life, there's a bad guy around. There are bad cops and there are good cops. I'm not here to stick up for the cops or be against them. I went through the system myself. Hey, Bernie, this is Brentwood calling.
Yes.
Anyway, and I taught myself law. If you're someone that doesn't know any law, you can ask someone to guide you through a little law or just read some law yourself to just become familiar with some of the things that go on or somehow the law is written or works or looks before you decide not to talk or to talk. Don't talk. Don't talk. Don't talk. But not only that, some cops and there are all different levels of cops, will lie and put something on you that you didn't have, or say you have something, or you could slip and give the wrong date for your own birthday, which you were born with and you know, but if you say the 28th instead of the 29th and slip, they may just say, well, that's it. And like the guy said on your show tonight, he said they can and will use against you. That's what it says. Can and will be used against you. Why can and will? What if you say, you know, I like butterscotch? Why are you pre-stating that will be used against you? Hello?
All right. Thanks very much for that call. And again, our phone number 212-209-2900. Red Hack.
You know, it's interesting because there are, you know, people do get Mirandized, right? They get rid of their Miranda rights. And this stems from the fact that people, I guess, in general, don't know that they don't have to talk to the police. But I mean, if you listen to it, they're basically telling you that you don't have to talk. And that's, you know, there's a reason that they're telling you that. So, you know, just remember that.
In all the times I've been arrested, I've never been read my Miranda rights.
Well, yeah, the police are very good at avoiding the Miranda warning, and they're also very good at making the Miranda warning seem unimportant. So they only have to read it in very specific circumstances, and they're good at making those circumstances not apply. The circumstances are if you're interrogated after you've been arrested, not if they just bust in your home with the plan of arresting you.
All right, let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah, how you doing? Calling in from Long Island. Got a few interesting points I'd like to discuss.
Okay, make them quickly. Go ahead.
Oh, I didn't know I was on.
Yes.
All right, yeah. First of all, when you say 2,600, I've been in the house, the guy that makes the magazine. Are you that guy?
You've been in the house. Well, you know what? I guess you didn't trip the alarm or something, but you must be good at what you do. I don't know. I'm not sure. There might be multiple people claiming to do that on the island.
No, because my friend Kat sits for the guy who writes the magazine, and I'm just saying I've been in that house a few times because we would hang out there. But anyways, the other thing I wanted to bring up is
no cats. There's only reptiles. Well, never mind. Let's not get into details as to what exactly is there. But what do you have a question?
Yes, I have a question. I'm on Facebook all the time, and I speak my mind, and it seems like when I go to job interviews, something flags me, and I basically almost get escorted out of the building. Not only that, when I went to JCPenney, I took an online exam. You know, you put in all your information, you answer all the questions correctly, and then they're like, oh, we're sorry, you failed the exam. I've been flagged somehow. I know I have because I'm always on there every other day saying the president should be in jail for high treason. And is there? And I've called up these places. There's 33 of them that create a profile, and I can't get my own profile. So this is my question: have I been profiled, and how do I find out what's out there about me?
Who wants to tackle this one? Rob?
Come to Hope and listen to Steve Rambam.
Well, you could do that.
Yeah, definitely. But also, when you apply for any job these days, one of the first things that they do is they do a web search on your name. So you do that web search on your name and see what they're seeing when they do so.
All right, that's one thing. We're going to move on because we have a very limited amount of time, but I hope you find the mystery person that you're looking for there. 212-209-2900 is our telephone number. We're on for another couple of minutes, and of course, you can also write to us, oth@2600.com. Red Hack.
Just one quick point for that last caller. You know, you might want to check your privacy settings and make sure not everything you say is public. And if it is, and if you want it to be that way, then, well, I don't know what to tell you. But, you know, there are obviously companies out there that profile people based on their posts. If you try to make yourself private in general, they can't get to that information, but, I mean, there's no guarantee.
Until they mess it up, and it all becomes public.
But if you want to be public about your views to the whole world, then I don't think we can help you.
Yeah, unfortunately. All right, let's take another phone call. And good evening. You're on the air. Speak up. Go ahead.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Not bad. Just listening to you guys, and I think you have some pretty solid advice with the police. Definitely, don't talk to them. They're not your friends, and they're absolutely not looking out for you in any way, shape, or form. I've been in New York all my life. My grandfather lifted me 95 years old. I asked him in his entire life, has a police officer ever done anything to help you? His answer was no. And I asked my father the same question. I know so many people lived their entire lives and were never helped in any way by the police. So they're out there to screw you. And definitely do not cooperate with them, because if you do, it's going to be something that you're going to regret. And whenever the police get in any trouble, the first thing they do is they get a lawyer immediately, and they don't cooperate, so you should just take notice from that.
Well, not only do they get a lawyer immediately, they also are shielded. Their names don't get released. They have plenty of time to work together with the people they're accused of committing crimes with to get the story straight. And just all kinds of things that you just cannot believe they actually are able to do. But, you know, I do sort of have to take exception to saying that all cops are bad or that there are no they don't help ever, because I've had good experiences with them as well. I've had plenty of bad experiences, don't get me wrong on that, but There are good people, good cops too.
I don't think that police officers are necessarily bad people, but I think that, you know, in the case where you are a suspect, where you're suspected of something, or where they're arresting you, the fact of the matter is that it's their job to find whoever committed whatever the crime is, and they're going to try to find out if you did it. And so, you know, unless
And they're not detectives, so they're going to go on the lousiest evidence to figure this out.
The thing is, you know, in this country, you know, crimes are you're convicted of a crime in a court, and up until that time, really, unless you have a lawyer who's helping you and representing you and helping you navigate that system, really, it's never in your best interests to talk to law enforcement keep quiet is the thing.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're guilty of that crime, then that's one thing, and you know, that'll be come out in the courts, but it's never in your best interests to talk about it.
It's too bad we don't remember this as a rule.
Unless, of course, you're reporting a crime and you want to talk to the court.
Of course, there's a difference. I'm saying when you're a suspect, when you're under arrest, that's, you know, then you're on the other side. You're not... that's when you need
and
to be quiet.
Oftentimes, especially with the lousy cops, you're a suspect no matter what. They just look at everybody with suspicion and hostility. But that's a whole other issue. Let's take one more phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes, hi. How you doing?
Hi. What's on your mind?
Good. Basically, what I want to say is I just want to say that I agree with the fact that if you ever get in a situation where you're arrested or you're under suspicion, definitely do not talk or at least exercise your right to speak to a lawyer. Because in the end, no matter what the cop says, whether he's allowed to lie or not, or whether you can prove that he lied, in the end, it's a judge that that basically decides your fate based on the law. Now, the cop can probably be the nicest guy in the world and say, yeah, we'll help you out, we'll work with you, we'll do whatever you can, we'll let you see your family, whatever. But in the end, it's up to a judge to decide what the law allows you to do.
Yeah, and to reiterate, you know, you're not most people are not experts in the law. You know, what you say, you may not know that you're committing a crime. And so just always keep quiet when you're under arrest.
Okay, we're out of time. Fascinating material. And, of course, we'll be focusing on this story in the weeks ahead. And we'd like to hear more from people, their opinions, any other news stories that they'd like to send us. Our address, oth@2600.com. We'll see you again next week. Good night.
And Harvey's brains out with my six gun.
I fought the law and I won. I fought the law and I won.
Try to write my book and make a million.
I fought the law and I won. I fought the law and I won.
I'm a new boss hero and a Ku Klux Klan. My friends think it's fun. You can get away with murder if you got a plan.
I fought the law and I won. I fought the law and I won. I fought the law and I won. I am the law.
So I won.
Yeah, rock and roll at the same time. Oh, yes. And you know, it's very exciting to be here at WBAI because we give news to the people that they do not get any other place. any place. You know, you listen to all of the major networks. You listen to any place you want. You will not hear about hackers, things going on behind the scenes, things that corporations are doing, and all of that. Well, as it is now 8 o'clock, March 7th, 2012. And WBAI New York 99.5 FM and streaming on the web at WBAI.org. And it means it's time for the personal computer shoe. Ooh. Hank.
Good evening. Good evening. Welcome to the personal computer show. And here we have in the studio is Stevie DB. I'm in the studio also with Joe King. And we soon will have our West Coast sidekick, David Perry.
He's on West Coast time.
Yeah, he's on West Coast. Hey, you know, one of the things I got to remind everyone of is that this weekend is daylight saving time.
Ah.
How many people know that this weekend you got to change the clock?
Why do they call it daylight savings time?
Well, basically, you get more daylight or more light during the daylight hours as opposed to... But the thing is, when you wake up and...
You wake up in the dark, you use the light.
Well, if you happen to get up late at
I've
night...
I've never understood you know? This. Hank, I'll turn off your mic and you keep explaining it because I don't have to listen to it. I never understood it.
Hey.
From the left coast, the dulcet and charming tones of David Perry. Hi, David.
I don't know how dulcet I am, but this is David Perry from the... It's nice. It's sunny out here still. It's only 5 o'clock at night. And it's about 72 degrees outside, but you guys are having a warm winter, too, aren't
yes,
you?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I have no coat today.
No, I was listening to Al Roker, and he was saying that this was going to, so far, be the warmest winter on record since he's been doing this kind of a job.
Last week, February broke the record. We tied the record. Yes.
That was Bruns batted in, or what record was that?
Oh, come on, the weather.
The weather. Everybody talks about it, and nobody does anything. That was Mark
Stick Ford. Around. It'll change.
Okay. Hank? Before we get all involved, I just want to tell the folks out there that we're going to have an interesting show tonight because we're going to get into three or four completely different, unrelated things. Tonight we're going to start later. We'll give you a heads up on it, but we're going to start part one of a explanation or explication, depending on how you want to phrase it, of malware. Because people have always asked, David in particular, but Hank gets a lot of mail also, I do, Stevie does, on what different kinds of malware are and how it's changed over the years. I remember our first malware show was back in the early 80s, 1980s, that is, not 1880s, that's when Hank was younger. And then we're going to also talk about something that's very much on Stevie's mind. As a matter of fact, that entire segment of tonight's show is you can thank Stevie for it. If you don't like it, I'll give you his home address and home phone number.
And come visit.
Come visit him. But if you do like it, you can, we'll give you some ideas on what you can do. And then, of course, Hank, as usual, will bring us up to date on some of the happenings in the world of computers. So, Hank, why don't you start the show off?
Well, first of all, Microsoft has released last week what they call Windows 8 Consumer Preview. That's a fancy word for beta. It's available for download. I've downloaded it. It's about 2.25 gigabytes.
How long did it take you to download?
Well, it's going to vary depending on...
How long did it take you to download it?
I really don't know because what I did is I started the download and I went out for some breakfast and when I came back from breakfast, it was done.
Stevie, did you download it?
I didn't download it, but who cares? You know, if you have a fast machine, it'll download a lot faster. If you're still using 56K, it'll be a lot longer.
Hank is telling you to speed up and he's telling
Always
me to speed up. He doesn't like us to talk. You know,
no,
he's
doesn't.
Got a thing he wants to.
Well,
go ahead,
first
Hank.
Of all, when you do the download, it's really in two parts. The first part is that it will examine your machine and tell you whether you can run Windows 8 on it. And if you can run Windows 7, you are 99% effectively being able, you will be able to run Windows 8. The requirements are almost identical. So that's one part of it. I mentioned only because
Hank, let me interrupt you. You can run part of it, but
I said
Windows,
a good part of it.
I run Windows 7 on my netbook, but I can't run touchscreen on it.
If you only run half of it, does that make it Windows 4?
That's an interesting question. Hank is looking like he wants to spit.
You guys want me to finish this or not, okay?
Please, I'm sorry.
All right. Windows 8, okay? Let me put it this way. If you happen to have a touch screen monitor which costs about $100 more if you're willing to, you know, if you happen to have it, or you want to buy a new monitor, you buy with a touchscreen capability, you will be able to run Windows 8 fully. But if you don't have it, that's okay, too. By the way, most people don't realize in Windows 7, if you have a touchscreen, you can also take advantage of the touchscreen software in Windows 7.
Didn't know that.
It doesn't have the gesturing that is in Windows 8, but you do have a touchscreen capability in Windows 7.
Well, on my phone, I have the gesturing and the touchscreen. Right. I just don't have Windows.
Okay. So it's available. We're going to be doing a first look on it. It should be quite interesting. But what's more interesting is the fact that Microsoft has announced that Windows 8 will also be available on the ARM processor.
That's ARM?
ARM.
And for those of us who are not hardware geeks, what is that?
Well, basically, these are the low-end processors, and they're really not that low-end. They come in as dual processors, quad processors, and so on, that you find available in the smartphones, in tablets. In other words, these are the processors that are slower than the Atom processor, but it uses a lot less electricity and in terms of voltage, so that for most people, speed is not the issue. The issue is battery life.
Is it voltage divided by watts equals amps, or is it amps divided by my mother-in-law's age?
I over E equals R.
Voltage times amps equals watts. Okay?
Thank you.
All right. So those are the important things that that from Microsoft. Now,
everybody's paying attention to that. Yeah, yeah. Oh, thanks for telling me that information.
Well, they're always telling me about
Go ahead.
Now, today Apple announced the iPod, the iPad. No Great. Number, no HD, just call iPad. And I gleaned through the information. Essentially, what they're saying is that they're going to be using a quad processor, which is an improvement over the iPad 2, which has a dual processor. They're quadrupling the resolution of the screen. And what's amazing is that they say battery life remains the same, Joe. And Dave, do you believe that?
Sure.
Go ahead.
The only battery life I have problems with is on my Samsung Galaxy Tab.
Now, wait a minute, Hank. If you're increasing this and increasing that and doing that, and you're saying it all burns the same energy?
No, I think they put a different battery in it, Joe.
They must have.
They're saying battery life.
Because I'll tell you, I've got a Samsung Charge, which is one of their 4G telephones, and with the standard battery that came with it, I got like 3.5 hours life, and when I changed it to a 2900 milliamp battery, I got 8 hours, so it's three times thicker, and I don't believe a word of any of that. But I do like the fact that they've really increased the resolution on the screen, and they're now giving you true high definition. Although, I'll tell you, I was there when Steve Jobs introduced the iPad 2, and he also led me to believe that that was true. Forget it.
How many pixels do you need for high resolution, Joe?
Well, so long as the low end is 1080, that would be considered HD.
Oh, and so the original iPad resolution was 1024?
No, 720.
Oh, iPad 2 is like 1024, though.
Yeah, but by 720.
By 720.
Right.
Oh, okay. So you need 1024
in other
vertical
words,
lines?
Yes. This one is 2048 by 1536, which is more than the 1080.
Yes, more than needed for high resolution.
Right. Now, the other two things that they have announced on this is that 4G will be available. So it's 10 times faster than 3G.
Whatever that means.
And the other is that the price will be the whatever the old price was on the iPad 2 will now be the new price for the iPad. And the iPad 2, it will continue in production, actually, whatever's in inventory, with a price drop. So other than that, the size, the weight, and so on, everything is just a smidgen more. So when you talk about a new battery, I don't know. But you know what? If they can pull it off 10 hours on this, I think it would be something to look at. Now, on that front, just prior to this, 1 or 2 days ago, Apple also made an announcement. and that they said that, gee, you know, with the iPad, you know, how, by the way, I think I sent you the information on it with the introduction of iPad. You know how many new jobs they created?
About, I tell you, I read your news story, but I made my own estimate. I figure they created maybe three or four jobs. Maybe
no,
five.
They said they created 900,000 jobs.
Yeah, they said that, and that really took the curse off what everybody else was talking about, which was how many people they killed.
Oh, wow. Now well, let's finish this one, okay? They said that 900,000 jobs, of which they said 240,000 of that is overseas. The rest of it is in the United States.
Did they happen to give you a name and a phone number that you could call?
Now, I mean, when Apple makes a statement that they created new jobs, isn't that a nice, warm, fuzzy a feeling that, baby, that you should have for Apple?
Stevie, is that a nice, warm feeling I should have for Apple?
Well, let's hear about the jobs they created overseas.
Yeah, but the thing is, they created more jobs in the United States than overseas. I mean, shouldn't you be happy about that?
Well, if you invested in their stock is $530.69 right now.
Well, like